Well, last week we looked at the fruit of the Spirit as a whole, and today we want to turn our attention to the first virtue that Paul mentions here, and that is love. And I don't think it's an accident that Paul mentions love first, because love is so highly regarded in the Scriptures. It is the chief of graces. In fact, some commentators believe that the rest of this fruit of the Spirit is simply an explanation, commentary upon love. And certainly there's perhaps some truth to that, because Paul defines or describes love in 1 Corinthians 13 as being patient and kind, which are two aspects of the fruit of the Spirit. But today we want to look at love. And what kind of love is Paul talking about here? Is it love for God, or is it love for one another? Well, the context suggests that Paul has love for one another primarily in mind, because the fruit of the Spirit is surrounded by discussion concerning interpersonal relations. Verse 15, Paul speaks about how they're biting, devouring one another, or maybe. In verse 26, he warns about provoking one another and envying one another. So the discussion there is clearly on the horizontal relationships that are there in Galatia. So the focus does seem probably on love for neighbor, in this passage at least. But without a doubt, part of the fruit of the Spirit in terms of love will include love for God and love for one another. And so we will look at each as we consider the fruit of love. But first, we do want to talk about what love is. I mean, what is love after all? And as you know, the Bible isn't a textbook. It's not a dictionary. It doesn't contain a glossary in the back. And so you won't find a technical definition of love. But that's not to say, though, that the Bible doesn't teach us about love. It has much to say on this important topic. It just doesn't do so in an abstract, technical way. Rather, it teaches us about love by telling us what love does, what love feels, by providing concrete examples of love, and also by telling us who love is. God is love, and love is from God. So if you want to know what love is, then look to God. Get to know Him, and you will know what love is. Be known by God. Have a saving relationship with God through Jesus Christ, and you will know what true love is by firsthand experience. Well, 1 Corinthians 13, of course, is the premier chapter on love, and it teaches us what love is by illustrating it through concrete examples or actions of love. The other great chapter on love is Leviticus 19. And there in verse 18, Moses commands us to love our neighbor as we love ourselves. But of course, you would ask, well, what does it mean to love your neighbor? Well, in the preceding verses of verse 18, Paul, or rather Moses, provides concrete examples of what love does and what love does not do. And so we have many examples, many actions, commands to do what love is to do. But of course, the ultimate illustration is the love of Christ. When we look at Him, there we see, learn, and experience what love is all about. Jesus loved us to the uttermost. There's no greater love than that a man should die for his friends, Jesus says in John 15, verse 13. And John, in his first epistle, defines love in this way: by this we know love, that he laid down his life for us, and we ought to lay down our lives for the brothers. Now, John, of course, is not saying that in order to love, we need to die for one another. Love certainly may lead you to die for someone, but John is not saying that that's how you love or the only way to love. He's simply making the point that we need to love one another in the same way that Jesus loved us, who was willing to die for us because that is what we needed. In other words, to love like Jesus is simply to love one another sacrificially and beneficially. Jesus died for us because his death is what we needed in order to be saved from our sins and brought to him. He didn't die simply to prove his love or simply to set an example for us. He died and suffered in that way because that's what we needed. It was for our benefit. He did something that was for our welfare. And that's what love really is. It is to sacrifice ourselves for the good of another. So here we see that the heart of love can be encapsulated in that word, sacrifice. Another word that we could use and that the Bible uses is the word give. So, for example, in Ephesians 5, Paul says, "Husbands, love your wives as Christ loved the church and gave himself up for her." Christ's love is expressed and displayed in his giving up of himself. John 3:16, "God so loved the world that he gave his only son." Ephesians 5:2, "Christ loved us and gave himself for us." So here we see then that love is the exact opposite of selfishness. Love sacrifices itself for others, whereas selfishness sacrifices others for itself. Now, lust is often confused with love, but lust really is a prime example of selfishness. Lust will use people to satisfy its own desires. It takes from other people. But love is what gives and sacrifices for other people. But we should be careful, though, in saying these things, not to confuse love with agreeableness. Love, of course, is not necessarily giving people what they want. It's giving what is best for them, what is for their welfare. That might involve stepping on their toes instead of propping their feet up. Love is certainly not a doormat. It's a servant that seeks the good, the true benefit of the other person. Now, in focusing on what love does or does not do, I don't want to give the impression that love is purely an act of the will or an action with no affection or feeling or desire. Love, of course, involves our whole being, which includes our feelings, desires, our longings, and so on. We are, after all, human beings. We're not robots. And we are to love God with our whole being, with our whole heart. And so it's going to include loving from the heart and with the heart. And that will include our desires, our emotions, and so on. Love certainly is emotional in that sense. Now, with keeping that definition, that brief definition then in mind, let's consider what love looks like in terms of our love for God and then what it looks like in terms of our love for one another. And when we talk about love for God, it will certainly mean that we will put God first in our life. We are, after all, to worship the Creator, not the creature. We're to have no other gods before the one true living God. And so if we do put other people first, or other things first, or ourselves before God, then we are not loving him. God and God alone deserves to be number one in our lives. And so that will mean that we will at times have to say no to other people. It means that we're going to put our trust in God, not other people, not in our bank account, not in our government, but we're going to love God and put him first and trust in him. Jesus says to be his disciple, you need to hate your father, your mother, your brother, your sister. And of course, when he says that, he's not saying you need to actually hate them. After all, we're called to love even our enemies. The point is that we're to love Christ more. He is to come first before everybody else. That's how we love God. A husband is to love all persons, including all other women. But he is to love his wife more and in a special way. He is to put his wife first. And if he doesn't do that, then he's not truly loving his wife. Well, we are to love God in the same way. We are to love ourselves and other people. But we are to love God more and in a very special way. Love for God also means that we're going to hate the world. John says that if anyone loves the world, the love of the Father is not in him. Now, world here, of course, refers to all that which is in rebellion against God, in opposition to him. John defines it as the desires of the flesh, the desires of the eyes, and the pride and possessions. In a similar fashion, James says that friendship with the world is enmity with God. So picture it this way. If you were to join ISIS and fight against the USA, well, that would mean, wouldn't it, that you don't love the USA anymore. You can't love the United States of America and her enemies at the same time. You can't serve God and Baal. You can't love God and the world at the same time. So love for God means hating the world. But thirdly, love for God will also display itself and express itself in keeping God's commandments. That's what Jesus said. If you love me, you will keep my commandments. In fact, John says this in his second epistle, and this is love, that we walk according to his commandments. So if you love God, then that's what you will do. I mean, and of course it makes sense. If you love God, then of course you're going to do what he wants you to do and requires you to do. So love is never contrary to law keeping. It's in fact expressed in and by means of it. If we love God, that will also mean that we will love one another. John says, if anyone says, I love God, but hates his brother, he is a liar. For he who does not love his brother whom he has seen cannot love God whom he has not seen. So love for God and love for one another always go hand in hand. And we love God by loving one another. And that too makes sense too, because when you consider the fact that human beings are made in the image of God. And so if you love God, then you're going to love, of course, his image bearer. But if you hate the image bearer of God, then that indicates that you don't really love God at all. So if a woman puts a picture of her husband on the wall and starts throwing darts at it in anger, what does that tell you? That she doesn't love her husband, regardless of what she may say about her husband. James notes what a contradiction it is for us to use our tongue to bless our Lord and Father and then use that very same tongue to curse people who are made in the likeness of God. The two go hand in hand. Love for God always means love for his image bearer. And then finally, we want to note that love for God also means wanting to be with him. If you love somebody, you will want to spend time with that person. You will want to be where they are. And that's certainly true in our relationship with God. And that will translate into the fact that we will want to be with God's people and want to worship God with God's people, because that is primarily where we meet with our God. We come into his presence through the public worship of God. So love for him will be expressed in wanting to come and worship him. David says in Psalm 27, verse 4, one thing I have asked of the Lord, and that will I seek after, that I may dwell in the house of the Lord all the days of my life, to gaze upon the beauty of the Lord and to inquire in his temple. Or Psalm 84 says, how lovely is your dwelling place, O Lord of hosts. My soul longs, yes, faints for the courts of the Lord. My heart and flesh sing for joy to the living God. For a day in your courts is better than a thousand elsewhere. I would rather be a doorkeeper in the house of my God than dwell in the tents of wickedness. Well, that's love for God. What about love for our neighbor? What does that look like? If we were to paint a portrait of love for one another, what's that going to look like? Well, it will also look like keeping God's commandments. As we've already noted, love is not contrary to law keeping. Love sums up the law. And so if we love one another, that means we're not going to steal from each other, we're not going to commit adultery, we're not going to bear false witness, and so on. We're going to keep God's commandments. He shows how we are to demonstrate love for one another. It also means, though, that we will love everyone. Love for neighbor means you will love everyone. It's, of course, easy to love those who love you and to love those who are like you. The Pharisees, of course, were quite good at that. But the Bible instructs us in many places that we are to love all persons. A point, of course, beautifully illustrated by Jesus' parable of the Good Samaritan. And in particular, that means that we're going to love the poor, the disabled, the social outcast, and even our enemies. And so we're not going to slander our enemies. We're not going to return evil for evil. We will love and help all, because that's what love does. Love for neighbor also means that we will be impartial. This point could be considered, I suppose, a sub-point of loving everyone. Because again, it's easy to love those who are like us, who love us. It's easy to be partial to our friends, our family, partial to the rich, the famous, and so on. But we are not to be partial to one and to exclude others. We must not cater to the rich and ignore the poor, for example, or to be kind to our friends but ruthless to our enemies and our opponents. Of course, we see this kind of thing all the time in politics and even in the church. We give the benefit of the doubt to those on our side, to those who are on our side of the aisle, but those on the other side, we treat them differently. We overlook a multitude of sins when it comes to our friends, but we are ready to pounce for the slightest infraction on those across the aisle. But love is impartial because God is impartial. Love also means for our neighbor that we love even when we're not loved in return. Loving your neighbor means that you don't love to be loved. Have you ever wondered, how is it that someone can give their body to the flames and yet be without love? As Paul says in 1 Corinthians 13. I mean, is not that the highest expression of love, giving your body for someone else? And the reason, it seems to me, is found in the motive. Biblical love is not selfish. It gives to give for the welfare of the one being loved. Doesn't give yet. Not in a selfish way. So we might ask ourselves, are we kind to people so that they will be kind to us? Do we scratch their back for the sole purpose of having them scratch ours? A good litmus test, it seems, is our reaction when people don't recognize what we do for them. We scratch their back, but they don't scratch ours. And so we get upset, we get angry because they've not returned, because we've actually only done it because we want to get something from them. Well, that's not really love. Paul says in 2 Corinthians 12, verse 15, this, "And I will gladly spend and be spent for your souls, though the more abundantly I love you, the less I am loved." You see, Paul didn't stop loving the Corinthians when they didn't return the favor. It seemed to him that the more he sacrificed himself for them, the less that they loved him, and they treated him all the more poorly. But Paul, you see, didn't love them so that they would love him and make him feel good. Paul wasn't using the Corinthians to fill up his love cup, if you will. He loved them because he sought their benefit, and he would continue to seek their benefit, even though it might continue to cost him. I mean, that's what love is. It's sacrifice for the benefit of the one being loved. We see this same idea in Philippians, where Paul praises and thanks the Philippians for their financial gift when he was in trouble. And yet he says this, not that I seek the gift, but I seek the fruit that abounds to your account. You see, Paul didn't minister to the Philippians because he was seeking their money and that he relied upon their money and he wanted to be rich off of them. That wasn't his motivation. That wasn't his goal. He was generally seeking their welfare. He wasn't seeking their money, but the fruit that abounds to their account. Well, as I said before, the two great chapters on love are Leviticus 19 and 1 Corinthians 13. And according to these passages, here are some of the things that love does. Overlooks a multitude of sins, does not bear grudges or keep a record of wrongs, does not rejoice when someone sins, slow to expose another's sins, gives the benefit of the doubt, is patient, suffers long, endures all things, not easily provoked, honest in transactions, helps those who are in need. Those are just some of the things that love does or does not do. And of course, the Bible cannot cover every situation that would describe a loving action. Life is complex. Situations, circumstances are constantly changing. And so the question will always be, how do I love this person in this particular situation? What does love look like? What does sacrifice and for the benefit of another look like in this particular scenario? And again, the Bible doesn't cover every precise situation in life so that we can just look up the answer and we'll know exactly what we are to do. Certainly the Bible is sufficient for every good work, but we need wisdom to apply what the Bible says to our particular and unique circumstances. And there's one key principle that we've talked about before, but we'll mention it again today, that Jesus has given us to help us learn how we can love concretely in any given situation. And it is, of course, the golden rule. So whatever you wish that others would do to you, do also to them, for this is the law and the prophets. As we talked about before, we are experts, trained experts in how we like to be treated and how we know how we want to be loved. We don't have to study that. We know already. We are experts in how to look out for our own interests. And so all we need to do is apply that same expert knowledge and wisdom to others. Show the same love to others that we would want to be shown unto us. And so we put ourselves in our neighbor's shoes and we ask, well, how would I like to be treated in this situation? What would I want somebody else to do to me if I were in their shoes? And chances are, even if we aren't a Bible scholar or know all the ins and outs of the Ten Commandments, we would know exactly what we would want somebody to do for us. That's how great and instinctive our love for ourselves is. And so we are to love our neighbor as we love ourselves. That indeed sums up and fulfills the law. Well, the fruit of the Spirit is love. If we walk by the Spirit, we will love God and one another. But when we do find it hard to love, what we ought to do is certainly to meditate. At least one of the things is to meditate and reflect upon God's great love for us. God so loved us that he did not even spare his own son, but gave him up for us all. We love because he first loved us.